Order. Where is everybody? Messages from the House.
January the 30th, 2013, from the House of Representatives, message, third reading passed. Mr. President, the bills listed below passed the House on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill Number 26, Appraisal Management Company Regulation, ayes 59, noes 1. House Bill Number 71, Omnibus Water Bill Planning, ayes 60, Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk. January the 30th, 2013, from the House of Representatives, message, third reading passed, amended. Mr. President, the bills listed below passed the House on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. House Bill Number 152, Vehicle Accident Reporting, ayes 52, noes 8. House Bill Number 191, Emergency Child Placement Background Checks, ayes 60. House Bill Number 81, Large Project Funding, ayes 39, noes 21. House Bill Number 94, Immunization by Pharmacist, ayes 39, noes 21. And House Bill 177, Hathaway Success Curriculum, ayes 37, noes 23. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Members of the Senate, as your president, I have been made privy to a series of emails that are the most vile and disgusting things I've read in quite some time directed at a particular legislator. You all heard my opening speech, and you all know where I stand on these kinds of things. I hate to say that maybe I was prophetic, but it may be very well true. As your president, I am committed to protecting this institution, and particularly committed to protecting each and every one of you. If you receive such emails or such threats, please let me know, and we will forward them and make sure they're handled by the proper authorities. But such conduct is not tolerated, and I'm committed, as I said, to protecting this institution. House bills on first reading. House Bill 71. First reading of the House bill.
House Bill 71, Omnibus Water Bill Planning, sponsored by the Select Water Committee, and Act relating to water development projects. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 60.
House Bill 71 is referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture. House Bill 26, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill Number 26, Appraisal Management Company Regulation, sponsored by the Corporations Committee, and Act relating to professions. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 59, noes 1.
House Bill 26 is referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations. Reports from standing committees.
January the 30th, 2013, Mr. President, Committee Number 9, Mineral Business Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 60, Money Transmitters Act Amendments. Reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, 02, Senators Cole, Cooper, Hines, and Rotha, Senator Hines, Chairman. January the 30th, 2013, Mr. President, your Committee Number 9, Mineral Business and Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 59, Engrossed Banking Act Amendments, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, 02, Senators Cole, Cooper, Hines, and Rotha, Senator Hines, Chairman. January the 30th, 2013, Mr. President, your Committee Number 9, Mineral Business and Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 61, Engrossed Banking Division Nationwide Licensing System. Reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, 02, Senators Cole, Cooper, Hines, and Rotha, Senator Hines, Chairman. January the 30th, 2013, Mr. President, your Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred House Bill 82, Engrossed Interstate Sales of Health Insurance. Reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Anderson, 28, Senators Kraft, Nutty, Peterson, and Scott, Senator Scott, Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we're at that order of business, consideration of bills on general file.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the Senate return to resolve itself back into committee. The whole time, I want to say.
Return to Never Never Land.
We just want to return to committee.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Senator Meyer.
Committee of the Whole, come back to order. First bill for consideration is Senate File 129. Would the reading clerk please read the Senate file?
Senate File 129, Motor Vehicle Accident Serious Bodily Injury, sponsored by Senator Landon, and Act Relating to Motor Vehicles. It was referred to Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, who reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Barnard, Burns, and Kraft. No, Senators Christensen and Driscoll. Senator Burns, Chairman.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it give a favorable recommendation to Senate File 129, there are no standing committee amendments, and to give a feeble excuse for an argument for this bill, I call on the short legislator from Natrona County.
Senator Burns, let's be nice now. Senator Landon.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to thank the good president for his comments, and I don't want to thank the chairman for his over in the far side of the room there. But fellow senators, this is a Senate File 129 gives us an opportunity to talk about, unfortunately, a situation that occurs nationwide and is occurring more frequently, and that is careless and distracted driving. If it gives you any comfort, almost every legislature in the country right now is dealing with this same issue. That is not, however, why I brought Senate File 129. We have had, as I told committee members, we've had a 2 or 3 year period of time up in my community in which we've had horrible loss of life and a lot of distracted and careless driving. You might have read about an incident where a driver pulled out in front of a motorcycle, and both of the riders of the motorcycle were killed instantly. The only thing that the driver of the vehicle was charged with was just a minor vehicle accident infraction, wrong turn on a red light, and paid her $200, and that was it. you might have heard after our county fair and rodeo parade, we had a Conestoga wagon going down one of the streets, and a driver took out the Conestoga wagon. We had to put both the horses down. Both of the riders in the wagon were sent to the hospital, still recovering. The driver was cited, you know, and is fighting that citation, you know, under a minor statute. And so we met with a group in our community who said, quite frankly, that they didn't feel like the laws and the judicial system were being fair, and we're letting them down. So we bring to you Senate File 129, which would create a new subsection under Title 31, Chapter 5, and that new subsection provides for an additional penalty for violations resulting in serious bodily injury or death. There are two exceptions to this optional penalty, and this there is permissive language on page 2, the top line on page 2, which says that a judge may consider this statute. It's permissive. But 62106, the bottom of page 1, is vehicular and aggravated homicide statute. 315233 is driving while under the influence. Now, both of those penalties under law take intent or negligence, and those are the exceptions. Mr. Chairman, I want to emphasize the language again at the bottom of page 1 and going over onto the top of page 2. You'll notice that we use the word may, that the court may determine to impose an additional penalty as provided under this subsection. If a court determines to impose an additional penalty, none of that penalty will combine to be more than $1,000 or more than 6 months in jail, thus staying underneath the misdemeanor statutes. Fellow senators, I provided for you, just to give you an idea of the kinds of accidents that we're talking about, I provided for you a sheet that says traffic fatalities 2012. I don't do that to distract or to muddy the water, because I'm sure that we could pick those apart. I do not have the police reports or anything. These are just examples of the kinds of accidents that we're talking about. If you'll notice in that third example, somebody was taken out on an illegal left-hand turn. The driver who was hit was killed. Another one was a driver taking somebody out in a crosswalk. You know, folks, I want to acknowledge that I have two good friends in the room who have brought similar legislation for our consideration here in this body. And this one is a much more tightly constructed suggested statute. We don't call for revocation of a driver's license. We don't call for a mandatory appearance in court. All we're doing with Senate File 129 is giving the courts an option in cases where they believe that there should be an additional option to levy a little bit stricter penalty. This bill really isn't about careless driving. It's about justice on the other end. You know, we're talking about somebody who's had their life altered forever. We're talking about families who have lost loved ones, and they feel like the justice system has let them down. This is a policy decision. This bill plugs a little bit of a hole in our statutes. And I look forward to trying to answer any questions you might have. Thank you.
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr.
President.
Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate, I rise in opposition to this bill. Not because I understand the good intentions of the good senator from Natrona County, but as he said in his presentation, what we're dealing with here is accidents. They are not intentional conduct. They're not of the type of conduct where you would impose the kind of penalties that are suggested in this bill. We already have you know, your vehicular homicide. We have your reckless driving. We have, you know, your DUI statutes and so forth. Those statutes impose pretty severe penalties at times. But when you're making a left-hand turn and you do it negligently, it's not, you don't have that mental capacity, the scienter as we talk about, or the intentional conduct. You're not necessarily, you're not trying to do any, you're not reckless in any way whatsoever. You made a mistake. It's an accident. And somebody gets hurt. So now we want to enhance the penalty for somebody who makes a mistake. I question how many of you have been involved in an accident. How many of you have made, you know, maybe the wrong turn at some time? Maybe it didn't happen where you had an accident, but maybe you did make the wrong turn. Is this the type of thing that we need to criminalize further? I suggest to you that what we're talking about here is simply negligent conduct, nothing more. Unfortunately, some of these things happen where people do get injured. And that's why you have the civil justice system, to right those wrongs, to file your wrongful death lawsuits, or to file your personal injury lawsuits, and so forth. So believe me, there are repercussions for making a mistake, but we handle that within the civil judicial system, not by saying you ran a red light and somebody really got hurt or something like that, and then all of a sudden we're going to enhance the penalty. Quite frankly, if we're going to increase the jail time and so forth as suggested in this bill, you will have to appear in court. And you will most likely want a jury trial. And you have the right to that. And then the question is, what does the court do if there is a jury trial? The court must find that you are guilty beyond a reasonable doubt of what the offense is. Well, that may be easy enough, but is it... Can the court find you guilty beyond a reasonable doubt for something that you did negligently? We're not talking about reckless, and we're not talking about extreme indifference. We're not talking about reckless endangerment. We have all of those statutes. Some of those I was a sponsor of. But we're talking about negligent conduct. I know that the good sponsor of this bill knew that I would come after this bill and at least explain my opposition to it. I understand the predicament. I understand that there are tragedies that happen. But in life, that is life. Sometimes we have tragedies, and it's not because of anybody being criminal.
Senator Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was in the committee that heard the testimony, and we looked at the handouts, and we had a really good discussion about this bill and the circumstances around it and some of the issues out there. And if I draw your attention to the handout. When we went through the handout, what I noticed is, and this isn't there's no intention here to cloud or hurt any of the people that were involved in these cases. But when you look at the handout, several of these cases, the prosecutors were involved in them. There were dismissals. There were charges made and dismissals that went along. So there were several of these cases ended up going through the system. And for whatever reason, it's hard to base or figure out everything based on one paragraph when it was probably a lengthy investigation. But it appears that there were investigations into this. This bill suggests, or it doesn't suggest, it calls for a misdemeanor charge in the 31 series, which is your driving laws. And if you look over in the Chapter 6, Article 6, anyway, 62107, we already have a misdemeanor negligent homicide that it's a misdemeanor. And so the only difference on the outcome between these, as I'm seeing, is this bill asks for 1 year or $1,000, and we have a statute already that may cover some of these. It is another misdemeanor that says 1 year, up to 1 year, or $2,000. And I'm not sure why we're going from, we have a very, very similar law already on the books in the 6 series and going to the 31 series, but it seems like we may already have this covered. And clearly, tragedies, unfortunate outcomes, but I just caution us to be careful on this.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I'm a co-sponsor on the bill with my good friend. And what we bring to you today for your consideration is really it's a policy decision. And the things that are said by the good president of the Senate are true, as is the good senator from Teton County in front of me just said. Let me outline for you what the difference is. When you get down to it, what the good senator from Teton County was referring to is these are the statutes under Title VI, which basically offenses against the person in Chapter 2 that might apply in these types of accidents. One is homicide by vehicle. That's aggravated homicide by vehicle. Carries a penalty of 20 years, and you get that if you kill somebody while you're drunk while flying, drunk while boating, or drunk while driving. Actually, not, I misspoke. Flying under the influence, boating under the influence, or driving under the influence. There's always dispute about whether you were drunk or not. Anyway, or you operate or drive a vehicle in a reckless manner and your conduct is the death of another person. So in that regard, Mr. Chairman, you're talking about recklessness. The other ones are simple assault, and there is aggravated assault, which generally call intent. Generally, both of them are generally going to require intentional, knowing, or reckless, which all has to go with kind of your culpability as you do these things. And when you talk about reckless, Mr. Chairman, what you're talking about, a person is guilty of reckless. Generally, you engage in conduct which places another person in danger of death or serious bodily injury. It's a willful and wanton, complete disregard for the circumstances and what the effects might be. The other one that the good senator in front of me was referring to was criminally negligent homicide. And what you have there is, and a criminally negligent homicide is, generally it's a misdemeanor. It's a high misdemeanor punishable by not more than 1 year or a fine of not more than $2,000. So it is a misdemeanor, but it's a high misdemeanor. And a person is guilty of criminally negligent homicide if he causes the death of another person by conduct amounting to criminal negligence. And this is where we really get to the crux. What's criminal negligence? And this is where the policy decision before us, Mr. Chairman. Wyoming statute defines criminal negligence as the following conduct. A person acts with criminal negligence when, through a gross deviation from the standard of care that a reasonable person would exercise, he fails to perceive a substantial and unjustifiable risk that the harm he is accused of causing will occur and the harm results. The risk shall be of such nature and degree that a failure to perceive it constitutes a gross deviation from the standard of care that a reasonable person would observe in that situation. So that's what criminal negligence is, and that's one the good senator from Teton County is referring to. And what this bill presents to you is, are we willing, because of the circumstances which now we've got, are you willing to create a low misdemeanor for conduct that doesn't rise to the level of what we call criminally negligent? So ordinary, the way this would most likely work is the good senator from Laramie County, our Senate president, exactly right. It's going to be ordinary negligence. And if that ordinary negligence results in serious injury or death of an individual, then if it's under circumstances that a prosecutor believes may not rise to the level of criminal negligence, but still is sufficient that it warrants additional penalty or punishment that would impose, in this instance, as we see in this bill, a low misdemeanor of something that's less not more than six months, and then a fine of $1,000. So that's the that's kind of the policy decision as I see it, Mr. Chairman. When it comes down to the civil justice system, a lot of times that works really well, but other times, Mr. Chairman, it's just not appropriate. A lot of times what you find is a number of cases, if an individual is uninsured, there may be the civil justice system may provide no recourse to you, or under our law, a person can have as little as $25,000 of liability insurance, and that may be the only recourse that's available. And so sometimes, while in many instances civil justice system can provide a strong penalty, in many other instances it doesn't. And so I think that's the decision before us at the end of the day. And I think it comes down to this, is even though it may be ordinary negligence, is it right, Mr. Chairman, to be involved in an accident where you may have been no more than negligent, but you end up taking the life of a person, and the only penalty you have is to mail in the bond amount for the failure to yield the right-of-way or the running a red light, to mail in $200, and that's the total amount of the consequence that you pay. And I think that's the policy decision that we have before us and that this bill presents.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And on and against the bill, folks, our entire system of American jurisprudence is designed to where we punish conduct and not the consequences. And in some of these areas, it seems like maybe hard. If you think about, here are some areas where we call, where you're dealing with what originally might have been ultra-hazardous activities. Transportation of gasoline, electricity, water, putting a dam on your property, because if a dam collapses, you may have a reservoir, and it seems like a pretty innocuous thing, but water is a dangerous animal, if you will, harnessed there. If it's released, it can destroy homes, families. Those are all extra activities. Extra dangerous activities. And another one is motor vehicles. If you're going to go back in time and you want to create a higher duty of care, if you want to say anybody that drives a motor vehicle has a duty of care to do X, Y, Z, and if you fail to do that duty, then you can enhance the criminal or the conduct, you can do that. But we have a series of motor vehicle statutes. Those are the rules of the road, and if you violate them, there are consequences. If you want to do an aggravation, you look at the character of your conduct. You say, look, if the breach was intentional, and this is what we a lawyer call scienter, that is, what is the level of your intent? And we have a lot of areas where we engage this. If you do the violation while you're drinking, there's an enhanced penalty. If you do it while you're engaged in horsing around, there's an enhanced penalty. But, folks, whether you're handling electricity, water, gasoline, motor vehicles, ordinary conduct that can be inadvertent and can have strong consequences. Everything from fires to electrocutions to all those sorts of things. And those are just part of our society that we've adopted. But we don't punish people based upon the nature of the task you're at. When you're driving a vehicle, it's a dangerous vehicle, a dangerous instrumentality. And bad things can happen because of the nature of the beast. When you're an electrician and you're not careful and you leave your wires exposed, somebody hits them, there's electrocution. If it's negligence, one thing, but if you didn't do it intentionally, bad things happen. But those are a benefit to society. And once we've reached that acceptance of those instrumentalities and those benefits, then we understand that certainly strong consequences could happen, but we judge you and we punish you based upon the conduct, not the consequences when using those instrumentalities.
See no further discussion? Senator Landon.
Well, Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I knew that we'd have a good discussion on this. I appreciate the comments from the back of the room, and you know they're absolutely right, folks. You know you can certainly go through the civil justice system. You know, there's a famous case out in California where it involved a football player, and I think everybody in the room would agree that we probably didn't get justice on that one. So, you know, it ended up in the civil courts, and even after that judgment, I don't think anybody thought justice had been served in that one. So certainly there's the civil justice system, and that's where you go and you hire an attorney, and you know, a year or two later, you come out with whatever settlement. And my good friend outlined that sometimes, you know, that can be a little bit, or it might be a little bit more than that, depending on the insurance or whatever. You know, remember, these are accidents that don't rise to the levels, you know, in the two statutes that we've been talking about. But these are nevertheless accidents that cost a life. That's something you can't go back on. They cost serious bodily injury. We define serious bodily injury in our statutes. Those are debilitating injuries that you live with the rest of your life. And this is a statute that plugs a hole from mailing in your $100 fine for failure to yield or for running a red light, and it not being to the level of a vehicular homicide. This really isn't about people being bad. This statute is about justice. This is about beginning to address something that this distracted and this distracted driving issue, folks, is getting bigger and bigger. One out of every five accidents that involve a death in the United States this last year were the result of careless and distracted driving and could have been prohibited. All this statute does is provide the courts with a little bit more leverage for somebody, for example, who, what if this person had run about three previous red lights and then finally runs over somebody and kills them? That's where this statute could be beneficial. And like I said, on the family's behalf, this is about justice. Thank you.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Chairman. And folks, I'll tell you what. This is not going to render justice for those families that think that the harm's there. With respect to carelessness, there's another crime. You can be careless driving. If it's reckless, there's reckless driving. If you're distracted or you're doing something, there's another crime for that. Make those crimes, because that's the conduct, your punishment. And I'll tell you, folks, if you want justice and you want to make sure there's an opportunity for justice, do the right thing. Come back and amend our insurance code to provide that you have to have $250,000 of insurance so there's justice. There's no justice in having, if you have lost one due to negligence, this isn't what gives you justice. It's an economic loss. That's a real shame if you look at the low dollar limits that we require folks to drive these dangerous instrumentalities. That's where you're going to get your justice.
Question being called on the bill. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
All those in favor, please rise. All those opposed, please rise. Clerk, please call the roll. Pardon? Senate File 129 has failed pursuant to SR 65, having failed a standing division vote. A roll call vote is required. Will the Chief Clerk please call the roll?
Anderson District 2? No. Anderson District 28? No. Barnard?
Aye.
Bebout?
No.
Burns?
No.
Case?
No.
Christensen?
No.
Coe?
No.
Cooper?
No.
Kraft?
No.
Dockstader?
No.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Amrick?
No.
Esquibel?
No.
Geis?
No.
Hastert?
No.
Hicks?
Aye.
Hines?
Aye.
Johnson?
No.
Landon?
Aye.
Meyer?
No.
Nicholas?
No.
Nutting?
No.
Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Rothfuss?
No.
Schiffer?
No.
Scott?
No.
Bonflatern?
No.
President Ross?
No.
Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 8 ayes, 22 noes.
Senate File 129, having failed a roll call vote pursuant to SR 65A, is deemed indefinitely postponed. The next bill for consideration is Senate File 130. Would the reading clerk please read the bill?
Senate File 130, Professional Licensing Military, sponsored by Senator Landon, and Act Relating to Professions and Occupations. It was referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, Military Affairs, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Cooper, Esquibel, Landon, Schiffer, Bonflatern, Senator Bonflatern, Chairman.
Senator Bonflatern.
Mr. Chairman, I move when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a due pass on Senate File 130, excuse me, sir, and to explain this great little bill, the last gentleman that was up explaining, let's hope he has a little more luck with this one.
Senator Landon.
Well, Mr. Chairman, at the very least, this should give enough time for the folks at the back of the room to reload their pistols. So we'll, I don't know if the transportation chairman wants me to have this one or not, but folks, this bill comes to you in the interest of full disclosure. It's one of those bills that was worked on during the last two interims by our Transportation and Military Affairs Committee. It's a bill that's been well vetted. And frankly, even improved since it got down here. But it appeared as the very first bill on the other side, and the other side just struggled to get up to speed with it. So we brought it back over here, and I think it's a good little bill. And I have provided for you, some talking points on this bill, and you'll find those up above in the colored handout on professional licensing for military members, and I won't bore you with reading completely through that. But what this bill does, Mr. Chairman, is to create a new section, or 33.1.116, and this is a bill about professional and occupational licensure of military service members. You'll remember a companion bill, and that's why this one will look somewhat similar. And what this bill does, Mr. Chairman, is to try to encourage our boards here in the state of Wyoming to do all they can to recognize the experience and the relevant education that a military member receives during service, and then to do everything they can as a board to utilize that experience and education in the licensing. It doesn't do anything to lower the bar for those licensing boards. It doesn't do anything except encourage those boards to do all they can for our military. I would call your attention to page 3 because, let me back you up to the final two lines on page 2, actually. And you'll see where the language on 23 and 24 says the board shall consider any relevant education, training, and experience received by the applicant. The military members will not. Section D on page 3 is something that we did to tighten this bill up a little bit. You'll remember that we had some concerns among a couple of our boards. And so what we did there was to exempt the attorneys at law or any profession having the authority to prescribe drugs that can only be obtained legally by prescription. That's the same language that we put in the other bill that went out of this chamber. We asked the Professional Licensing Board to adopt rules to implement the section. I would point out that this bill is in keeping with a nationwide initiative that you might have heard about. The First Lady and then the Vice President's wife stood up and announced an initiative nationwide to request that states and companies out there do all they can to help our returning military. So I think this is a good bill. I think it's we had good testimony in committee from the mayor of this city, and he considers this an important piece of legislation, information that will certainly be shared back on the Beltway. And so I encourage the members to pass this bill. Thank you.
Any further discussion? Question being called. All those in favor? Senator Von Flatiron's motion, the committee of the whole pass 130, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Senate file 130 has passed committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate file 135. The reading clerk, please read the file.
Senate file 135, Assisted Living Facilities Regulation, sponsored by Senator Scott. An act relating to regulation of health care facilities. It was referred to committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Anderson, 28, Senators Kraft, Nutting, Peterson, and Scott. Senator Scott, Chairman.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I move in the committee of the whole rise and report it do so with the recommendation that Senate file 135 do pass. There was a standing committee amendment. I ask it be read in at this time.
Senate file 135, standing committee amendment number 1, page 2, line 15.
Mr. Chairman, I move adoption of the standing committee amendment. Mr. Chairman, I'm going to partly explain the bill and the process of explaining the standing committee amendment as well. Mr. Chairman, this bill is another byproduct of the effort on the Medicaid reform, although this one is not so directly a Medicaid reform. Mr. Chairman, let me give you a little history. Late this fall, our city up in Casper, city government was having legislators in sort of one at a time for discussion of issues relating to the city, and we naturally got to discussing more. Actually, I was the only legislator present in that particular meeting. So we got discussing with the city what was going on in the healthcare area, which obviously has implications for them. And it turns out, Mr. Chairman, that Her Honor, the Mayor of Casper, runs an assisted living. So I was describing what the committee was doing, trying to control Medicaid costs, and said to her, you know, if you guys that run assisted livings didn't kick people out to the nursing home so quickly, we could save some money. You ought to adjust your standards for doing that. And she said, but it's your regulations that make us. So I said to her, tell me which regulations and we'll fix that. And, Mr. Chairman, she did. And that's what produced this bill. And basically what the bill is doing is the regulations which were developed with almost no guidance in the statute. We just turned the bureaucracy loose. The bill is attempting to loosen the regulations up a bit so some of the milder versions of conditions that can be quite severe, but some of the milder versions can be dealt with in the assisted living, which will enable them to keep their residence, Mr. Chairman, and that less restrictive, less costly venue for significantly longer. So I would represent to you that this bill will be popular both with the assisted living people because they get to know these people and they want to help them, and with the clients in the assisted living who do not want to go to a nursing home. And so that's the basics of the bill. Mr. Chairman, the Standing Committee amendment goes in and does tighten things up a little bit. On page 2, line 15, we were allowing the assisted living to care for open wounds. We probably went a step too far. After hearing testimony from various people, the committee said, let's say it's care of open skin lesions, read open wounds, without complications. So they can take care of the simple ones, aren't required when you get one of those to kick you out. Then we have on rest of page, lower on page 2, you had things to do with catheters or ostomies. Mr. Chairman, changing a catheter bag is not a big deal, but they can't do it now. This would enable it to be done, but the committee felt that taking care of ostomies was a step too far, so we took standing committee amendment takes that out. On the top of page 3, we're talking about care of residents with some bowel or bladder incontinence. The testimony was that once it gets to be complete incontinence, that's getting beyond what an assisted living can do. But occasional incontinence is a different matter. A lot of people will have occasional bouts of that as they get older. They're otherwise perfectly acceptable for an assisted living, and the facilities ought to be able to take care of that, help the residents. I think from the testimony we got, I think some of them are doing it anyhow in spite of the regulations, but it's just common sense. So the Standing Committee amendment says they can take care of occasional incontinence. Page 3, line 8, with regard to oxygen, very common for older people to need some oxygen beyond oxygen. Some of the mechanics there, the changing of bottles and whatnot, are a little intimidating to some of the residents, and useful if they have some help, but they're not going to get the continuous monitoring that you would in a nursing home. So the language with the Standing Committee amendment is that the assisted living can take care of that oxygen when the patient's health condition would tolerate a lack of continuous oxygen therapy. So if the oxygen runs out a bit because the patient isn't up to dealing with it and it's a while before it gets changed, there's no disaster. And that's the situation that many older people, Mr. Chairman, are in. So I think that's appropriate. We did two other things. There was a request, you see at the top of page 4. Right now the regulations say you've got to have, if you're in assisted living, you have to have a certified dietary manager. Mr. Chairman, the testimony we had in committee was those people are generally not available in Wyoming. They aren't trained here, and that almost none of the assisted livings have them. They're just in violation of the regulations. And this would say, okay, if you've got a contract and the Standing Committee amendment, it's a Wyoming licensed dietitian, which is what they do instead, you're perfectly all right. So that takes care of that particular problem. And then we add a precaution at the bottom of the Standing Committee amendment. We're going to adjust the staffing according to an established policy of the facility as necessary to provide for the acuity level in the facility. Frankly, Mr. Chairman, I think that precaution is probably unnecessary. I don't think they will really raise the acuity level very much, and we'll need to adjust the staffing, but if they do, then this says you've got to. Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to answer any comments on the Standing Committee amendment, and let's deal with that before we deal with the rest of the bill.
We are on the amendment. Any discussion? Seeing no discussion, the question is on Senator Scott's motion that the Standing Committee amendment to Senate File 135 do pass. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, the Standing Committee amendment has passed, and we are back on the bill. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, a couple of other things that are important. If you look on page 3, lines 12 to 18, that all the conditions that we talk about, the assisted, and it's all, they may provide these services, and then it says very bluntly, assisted living facilities shall have the right to declare a specific residence condition is beyond the ability of the facility to provide care, require the resident obtain outside professional assistance, or move to a different facility. You're dealing, in many of these cases, with spectrums, and at some point you get far enough down the spectrum that you really need the continuous nursing care that an assisted living does not provide. So that's a precaution that's important. And then I would add, you have a section 2 on page 4. We're telling the department to conduct a review of the rest of the regulations and give them some objectives, some guidance that they don't now have. And you can see those are single eye ability to provide resident assistance in performing tasks of living and care that a willing and able family member could, and a statement that's in the interest of the people in the state of Wyoming for residents of assisted living to remain in the least, less restrictive and less expensive environment as long as possible. That review is already underway, and what this bill does is give that review a push and say, look, in these areas, you've got to loosen up a bit. They may loosen it a little further, but listening to the bureaucracy and committee, Mr. Chairman, I think the bill is very much necessary. There's another provision that is potentially very important. On page 5, lines 8 through 13, some of these assisted livings have Medicaid clients, and if the Medicaid regulations aren't reasonable, this says, okay, we can have a set of requirements that apply just to those facilities that take Medicaid or just to the Medicaid patients that is more restrictive. And that's necessary because of the nature, Mr. Chairman, of the federal bureaucracy that we're dealing with for part of these people. Mr. Chairman, and then there's a report to the Joint Labor Committee on for a couple of years on what progress you're making in the regulations. Mr. Chairman, I will represent to the Senate that this regulation will help a number of people who are in assisted livings remain in a much pleasanter, much more, it's not home, but it's much more home-like circumstance for a good deal longer. And give the assisted living facilities the ability to just plain be sensible in what they have to do. The current regulations tend to be all or nothing, Mr. Chairman, and we need some flexibility there. This will give it. I will represent to you that we had opposition in the committee from some of the nursing home industry. And, Mr. Chairman, that's understandable on two scores. One, they're going to not get some of the people that would otherwise be forced to a nursing home that are, frankly, the easier patients to take care of because they aren't nearly as frail as the people who really belong in a nursing home. So it will mean that the nursing home facilities are more expensive to operate because their patient load becomes more acute. And we talked about that in the Medicaid reform bill, Mr. Chairman, and how we are going to have to do things with the nursing home reimbursement. And I think the second thing, Mr. Chairman, is that the training that the people that run nursing homes have is been pushed to emphasize patient safety, and that's important with a very frail population. But here, Mr. Chairman, we're dealing with a population that is willing to take a few chances with their safety to have a much better quality of life. And that's what's going on wherever we're trying to keep them in this kind of least restrictive environment or at home. You're taking a few chances with safety, but it's a chance that those residents want you to take because their life is so much pleasanter. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to answer any questions on the bill.
Any questions? Senator Barnard.
Mr. Chairman, I agree with the intent of this, and I think it will go a long way. I have some questions about those people who have diabetes, and my mother was in that condition. She could give herself her own diabetes treatment and insulin, but I wondered, will that be in these assisted care places? And then when the person becomes so fragile or senile that they can't give those injections, it's not that dangerous. And I wondered, is this covered in your prospectus here?
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, and the senator is exactly right. As the Senate knows, I do that regularly. I've got diabetes, and it's not, you got to take care of it. It's not hard to do. I haven't heard that there was a problem there, but that's the sort of thing that the further review that the health department's doing should look at and see, do we need to modify regulations on that so that those people can stay in an assisted living. And at some point, Mr. Chairman, with senile dementia and people can't remember whether they've given their injections or not, then maybe you'd better restrict that to nursing staff. And maybe it is something, it's not very hard to deal with, but you'll have to, that will require a careful look at, is an assisted living really equipped to handle that, or should that go to the nursing home?
Senator Barnard, follow up.
Just as a follow up to that, Mr. Chairman, can a licensed practical nurse come in to that assisted care in the morning and the evening, administer these doses and check medications, and then be gone, or do they have to be in there full time?
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, and that's a good point. These assisted livings have registered nurses on staff. Their regulations require it. They aren't on staff 24/7, but they are on staff regularly, and you also have CNAs there, but the nursing homes aren't required to have a registered nurse around the clock either. I think they tend to, but they're not required to. We looked into the regulations on that. Frankly, again, from my personal experience with the disease, Mr. Chairman, for many people, monitoring blood sugar once or twice a day, and depending on the insulin regimen, shots once a day, or maybe with each meal if you're more severe, as I am, you may need some assistance then. That's the committee did not get into, and this bill does not get into that area. That some of that's complicated enough. You need a little more knowledge than we had.
Senator Shiver.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple questions. As I read this bill, the ability to provide the expanded services for assisted living, that would apply to the veterans home also, I believe. But I'd like some confirmation of that. The second thing is, as I recall, going into the nursing home level of care, there's a very specific test that says, okay, you're eligible to go in. How does this impact that system? And I believe we're looking at the system, but what happens, how do we make those two admissions criteria work together or work seamlessly, I guess?
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, with regard to the veterans home, that did not specifically come up, but if they are licensed as an assisted living, and I suspect they are because that's what they are, then yes, it would affect them and give them a little more flexibility, I think, be quite useful to those residents. So it depends on how they're licensed. With regard to the form on the, it's the LT-101, they call it, that has to do with nursing home admission. That form was developed before there was such a critter as an assisted living. We had the Pioneer Home, which basically is one and was one long before the concept was developed, but we didn't have, when that form was developed, we didn't have assisted living. So it may well not mesh. And the, if you recall the Medicaid reform bill, the department is planning to redo that form. And they could take this into consideration, but the form basically, the as I remember it, and I have examined it in detail, it has to do with how frail the individual is and what the conditions of what the help they need in the activities of daily living. And basically, if you pass the muster, which is a fairly, set at a fairly low level currently, you're eligible to go in the nursing home. But we take care of a lot of those people either at home through the home and community-based waiver or in an assisted living facility through that Medicaid waiver. I think those people are all eligible to go to a nursing home, but they're, in fact, well enough off so they can, with some help, can stay in one of these two other settings. This, if they redo the form such as I think they're planning to, that there's a two-stage thing where you have to be a good deal more severe to be in a nursing home, this will help inform that redo effort, and we'll get a mesh that we probably don't now have because the form is out of date.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and a few questions. And I'd like to say I really do like the concept in this bill, and I think it's much needed. Looking at the nature of the study, we know that if you change the conditions of a population, you're going to change populations within the nursing home, and there hopefully we get a shift in population to the assisted living. The idea of assisted living has come to both of my small communities with a good deal of desire to do more with it. Thing we found that, number one, it's a difficult thing to do for smaller communities just because of the economy of scale. We've done local studies to indicate that there is indeed a need, and so we'd like to continue to pursue the idea of doing more. But in the event, and I think the effect of this would be this study, is there within this study an, a question in regard to those shifting populations, and if we get the desired effect of being able to put more people into the assisted living centers, how then are we going to accommodate those increased populations in terms of facilities, and how we might assist communities in meeting that increased population within the desired assisted living facilities?
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, trying to answer that. Mr. Chairman, the study is really just a review of the regulations to see what other changes need to be made to loosen it up more and gives them some objectives, trying to retain people in the least restrictive environment. On the facilities question, which won't be in the study, let me suggest to those of you who have smaller communities that have that desire but don't have the population maybe to justify a full-size facility. There is in the statute from a reform that we did, I think, 4 years ago, in the long-term care area, there is provision for what is known as an adult foster care facility. It never got implemented because the health department bureaucracy was not all that sympathetic to it and hasn't written the regulations, and there's been no push. But what that authorizes is a small facility, 5 residents, I forget whether we set it 5 or 6. We copied off Oregon and Washington, and one of those was 5 and one of those was 6, where the facility is managed by a CNA, in many ways is parallel to an assisted living, but typically will keep people longer than an assisted living does. and there's an opportunity there in the statute for one of those facilities, and it would be made to order for a small community because it would enable you to have one or more small facilities within the community on a essentially private for profit basis, very home-like. And the experience we heard of from Oregon, and frankly, I was tipped off to it, Mr. Chairman, by an individual at my church whose parents were in one out in Oregon, is that they take people, when people typically go to assisted living, and keep them a good deal longer because they get attached to them as they do other family members. And that would be a very good choice for a smaller community, and I think with the current management of the health department, a little push, and you'd get an ability to license one of those. It would be an effort that a smaller community could and I think should undertake and would give us, Mr. Chairman, another way of caring for our senior citizens as that is a good deal more humane than some of the institutions we now have.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a final question. You know, as I read over this purpose of this bill, I would ask you, do you think that if a person was to ask in the study for some population figures in regard to how many people that are out there currently in nursing homes whose possibility of changing as a result of this rule change, could we, would it fall within the view of this bill to put that in there so that we know in the event these rules were to be implemented, we'd have some idea generally how many people would qualify and therefore create a population shift that we would have to then look to solutions?
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I think what you'll see with this is not shifting anybody out of a nursing home back to an assisted living, except some people that are there on a short-term basis, because a fair amount of the nursing home population is there for rehab after a hospital stay. I know in our area, Mr. Chairman, I heard of a guy that had done quite a bit of work cleaning our irrigation ditches with a drag line, was in a nursing home, and the next thing happened was I met him on a four-wheeler at the neighbor's headgate. And he had gone through the nursing home on a rehab basis. Now, you will see that. But somebody who has gone to a nursing home long-term, Mr. Chairman, it's been my personal experience and what I've seen, and I think a very common experience, that those people go downhill quite a bit. The nursing home is sufficiently unpleasant that they tend to, in many cases, give up and they're not appropriate to go back. Well, I think you'll see with this bill is that people stay in an assisted living significantly longer, and we won't know that for a few years until we see how the assisted livings use the flexibility they have.
Thank you. Senator Anderson, 28.
Mr. Chairman, tall senator from Bates Creek sugarcoated that a little bit with what the nursing home had to say about the subject, but they came with fire in their eyes and oration in their bellies, and the senator, the longest-standing senator in the state of Wyoming, handled it quite nicely, and I'd like to compliment him on bringing this bill forward, and I rise for the bill.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman. Thank you, but I think our most junior senator has not yet experienced a set of people who feed at the government crop who really have fire in their eyes and are defending an empire.
Okay. Any more discussion on the bill? Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just one question. I'm wondering, as we do this, if we're getting ourselves crosswise with CMS at all.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, that's why I have had experience with CMS, and they're a difficult bureaucracy to deal with. And that's why put in the bill, subsection C, page 5, line 8, if necessary to comply with federal Medicaid law regulations, department may provide separately for restrictions on services provided by assisted living facilities to residents who are Medicaid clients or for restrictions on assisted living facilities that accept Medicaid clients. Yes, we may, and we took precautions in case the feds are unreasonable.
Any other discussion? Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion that when the committee in the whole rises to report with the that it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 135, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 135 is passed committee of the whole. The next file for our consideration is Senate File 141.
Senate File 141, Unlawful Use of Toxic Substances, sponsored by Senator Escobel, an act relating to crimes and offenses. It was referred to Committee Number 1 Judiciary, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Burns, Christensen, Escobel, and Hicks. No, Senator Schiffer. Senator Schiffer, Chairman.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, I move in the Committee of the Whole rise to report it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 141, Unlawful Use of Toxic Substances. Mr. Chairman, there is a standing committee amendment. I'd ask that it be read in at this time.
Senate File 141, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 2, line 8.
I will go ahead and move the standing committee amendment, and for a discussion of this bill, I yield to Senator Escobel.
Senator Escobel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Bring to you Senate File number 141. And, Mr. Chairman, just to give you a little bit of background on this, and this is back in 2005, Representative Colin Simpson introduced House Bill 75, Unlawful Use of Toxic Substances, and the bill, the present Senate File 141, will amend part of the that legislation. This bill was this proposed piece of legislation was brought to me by the Youth for Justice group out of Cody, and they were concerned over the fact that several about half a dozen people, according to them, had been involved in serious car crashes. And they were charged under this particular statute, which I guess is referred to as the Huffing Statute. The Youth for Justice out of Cody discussed this concern with the police department there in Cody and with the Park County Attorney. And it was that impetus that brought them to suggest that that the present statute could be amended to cover some of these other substances. For those of you that might not be familiar with the Huffing Statute, I'm sure you're familiar with some of the ingredients that they that it covers. It's volatile solvents, including but not limited to paint thinner, gasoline, correction fluid, felt tip markers, nail polish remover,
yeah, we're still on the
glue, aerosols,
we're still on the building.
Spray paint, deodorant, hair products, cooking products, and fabric protectors, and there's some other ones. The human mind knows no limits in terms of what to experiment with. So this bill, with the amendment, Mr. Chairman, which is basically the gist of the bill, is that it, and this is on page 2, line 8, line 8 is we delete the balance of line after a small fire, and we insert any other chemical or, and that's basically what this bill does. It modifies the present statute to hopefully cover some of these substances that were presently, for whatever reason, not being able to cover it, previously. There were no objections to this in committee. The Division of Criminal Investigation was supportive, as were other law enforcement agencies. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll try to answer any questions you might want to blow my way.
Senator Schiffer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I was a no vote on both the amendment, and really the amendment is the bill now. First of all, let me tell you what you're defining here is toxic substances. You can be arrested for anything that does what's in this bill. You can be a guest of the state for I don't know how long. But a little bit of history. The testimony on this amendment was written. The two law enforcement people, or two members of the court that were there, was a county attorney and the prosecuting attorney for this county. That's it. And of course, those guys like to convict people. And this is a slam dunk. For example, you all know my great and stalwart efforts to quit smoking. You could arrest me for chewing my Nicorette gum, because that's what it does. It does a lot of other things for me, too. But, I mean, this is so broad that literally you could be trying to heal yourself from a nicotine fit and be arrested. And Mr. Chairman, it places me in an impossible situation. But there's more to it than that. This is simply too broad. This is too broad. You're turning, and they're good people, and they go after the criminals. But this is just handing them a slow pitch to nail anybody, including guys like me that are trying to quit smoking, somebody who takes an Advil in the morning. That'll alter your mind. Never mind the pain pills I take every so often, which probably I should be guilty for. But you see what I'm saying? This is overstepping it by miles and a half. Anyway, that's why I voted no, and I urge you to vote no, both on the amendment and the bill. I think I do have a conflict.
Anderson, 28.
Mr. Chairman, the amendment, I think there's a word that probably shouldn't be in there or should be changed. It says any other chemical or substance capable of altering his mental or physical state, and at the first of that section B, I don't think that his fits in there. Maybe it needs to be changed.
That will be a technical correction, and our attorneys can make it. Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, notwithstanding the Nicorette gum, I saw an advertisement the other day that there is this nice little pill you could take and make your mind just do wonders, and it was all legal. And I think you can go to any health food store or any vitamin store. Blueberries are supposed to do you really good and have you increase your mental acuity, ginseng, all these different things. All of these are illegal now. And mental or physical state, practically any substance that you take in your body, including the nutrition in our lunchroom, would be illegal, because that would alter your mental or physical state. sugar would alter your mental or physical state. So okay, I'm glad you threw that candy bar away, good Senator. You know, Mr. Chairman, this amendment is entirely way too broad.
Question.
Way too broad.
This on the amendment, right? So I'm on
Okay. Do we have a motion on this?
Yes, I
move. Okay, question. All those in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion to adopt the Standing Committee amendment of the... All right. Okay. Adopt the Standing Committee amendment to Senate File 141, say aye. Opposed, say no.
No.
I'm not sure. The amendment has failed.
Okay, we're back on the bill. Any other discussion on the bill?
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Nicholas.
I'm not against the bill, but I really enjoy the language because I have a crazy neighbor who is a good friend of mine. He went down to the basement to clean, and he started off with Clorox. Didn't think he was getting a good enough job, so he brought the ammonia out. The Clorox, of course, hadn't dried off. And he, down in his shorts, he fortunately gets out, and he was euphoric. He was excited, but you know what he was? His stupefaction. And now I know exactly, that's a crime.
Now, Senator Barnard.
Mr. Chairman, I'm on and for this bill. I think it's a great bill. Because as I read this, and you look at the top of page 2, gases and other volatile chemicals, smoking contains like 167 toxic chemicals in your body. It does make your heart rate run up. It makes your skin have attention to it. And so if we pass this bill, nobody will be able to smoke and we'll save millions and millions of dollars on Medicaid.
Senator Hassett.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not so sure that we all wouldn't have to declare a conflict here. Talking about dulling of a person's brain, isn't that what the legislature does?
Okay. Question has been called. Let's see, question's been called on Senator Schiffer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 141. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
Let's have a division, and all those in favor, please rise. All those opposed, please rise. Pursuant to SR-65 having failed a standing division vote, a roll call vote is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Anderson, District 2. Anderson, District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
No.
Burns.
No.
Case.
No.
Christensen.
No.
Coe.
Aye.
Coe.
like the water.
Cooper.
No.
Kraft. Dockstader.
No.
Driscoll.
No.
Amrick.
No.
Esquivel.
I really did.
Geis.
No.
Hastert.
Aye.
Hicks.
No.
Hines.
No.
Johnson.
No.
Landon.
No.
Meyer.
No.
Nicholas.
No.
Nutting. Perkins.
No.
Peterson.
No.
Rothfuss.
No.
Schiffer.
No.
Scott.
No.
Von Platern.
Aye.
President Ross.
No.
Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 7 ayes, 23 noes.
Having failed a roll call vote pursuant to SR65A, Senate File 141 is deemed indefinitely postponed. Mr. Majority Floor Leader. Oh, Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I thought I heard Russ Zimmer's truck revving up, but this doesn't quite make so sense.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
You have heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
Motion carried.
Mr. President, motion carried.
I didn't know. What did you say? Sorry. Okay, wait a minute. The reading clerk will read the committee the whole report.
Mr. President, your committee of the whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, begs leave to report as follows. Senate File 113, do pass. Senate File 118, do pass amended. Senate File 129, failed to pass committee of the whole and was indefinitely postponed. Senate File 130, do pass. Senate File 135, do pass, amended. Senate File 141, failed to pass committee of the whole and was indefinitely postponed. Senator Meyer, Chairman.
Senator Meyer.
Mr. President, I move for the adoption of the committee of the whole report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The committee of the whole report has been adopted. We have reports from standing committees.
January the 30th, 2013, Mr. President, your committee number two, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 149, Complementary Hunting Licenses, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Bebout, Dockstader, Hastert, Meyer, and Perkins, Senator Bebout, Chairman. January the 30th, 2013, Mr. President, Committee Number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 116, Engrossed, Select Federal Natural Resource Management Committee, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Dockstader, Hastert, and Meyer. No, Senator Perkins, Senator Bebout, Chairman. January the 30th, 2013, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 78, Engrossed, Budget Review Process, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Bebout, Dockstader, Hastert, Meyer, and Perkins, Senator Bebout, Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move that the Senate stand adjourned until 10 a.m. tomorrow, Thursday, January 31st.
Announcements open. Senator Geis.
Mr. President, your committee number five, Agriculture, Public Land, Water Resources, will meet tomorrow night upon adjournment, and we're going to take up House Bill 3080 in gross, use of water outside of the state, House Bill 53 in gross, state land violations, House Bill 84 in gross, livestock fencing repairs, and House Bill 90 in gross, recreation liability activities.
Senator Rob Flater.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number eight, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, will meet at quarter till in 15 minutes in room 302. Please note the room change to discuss House Bill 69 engrossed highway funding.
Further announcements? Mr. Majority Floor, do we have an announcement for rules?
Mr. President, the Rules Committee will meet tomorrow at 8 a.m. in the S5 room over here at the President's office to consider Senate File 152, Overspending Budgets Penalty.
Okay. Further announcements? You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Senate stands adjourned until 10 a.m. Thursday, January 31st.